Hello and welcome to the Marketing Meetup Podcast. I'm Joe and thank you so much for listening in today. Today we have a real treat for you. We have Kirsty Hunter, who is the CMO of Innocent Smoothies, who delivered just a really lovely interview on how to market like Innocent. Kirsty took us through not only how Innocent think about marketing, but also her role within it. And also spoke about topics such as sustainability. And there was a really lovely moment at the end of the interview, all about Kirsty's reflections on the things that she wished she would have known in her marketing career and her career in general. It was a really lovely moment where she just opened up, and I have to say that there were some people in the chat feature who said that they got shivers, which was just a lovely, lovely thing. So do stick around for that bit at the end. I think it's best placed with context from the rest of the interview. With all that said, I'm now going to head over to the podcast recording itself. But before I do, I just need to say a big thank you to Cambridge Marketing College, who are this week's featured sponsor. Now, the thing that you need to know about Cambridge Marketing College is, first and foremost, they are the place to go if you would like your marketing qualifications. But secondly, they've also made a commitment. They're taking time to really consider about how their courses can teach their students about how to be more sustainable in their actions. They've decided that that's going to be an important part of their syllabuses going forwards. So not only will you learn how to be a great marketer, but also learn how to be a sustainable marketer too. So do take the time to check out Cambridge Marketing College. They're good people who have supported the Marketing Meetup for a long time. Very good humans. And with all that said, now is the time to pass over to myself and to Kirsty for a really lovely chat about marketing and Innocent Smoothies. Enjoy. So, right, Kirsty, thank you for taking the time. And let's start with a big question, the one that everyone is asking, which is, what's your favorite smoothie?
Mine's a classic strawberry and banana. So you can't beat a strawberry and banana. But at Fruit Towers, which is our head office, we have two big fridges and it's full of smoothies and all our juice products as well. So every day I can taste a different one. So it's one of the perks of the jobs working at Innocent.
Nice. That's awesome. Well, you're playing to the crowd as well there, because, you know, like the strawberry came through so strong. So
yeah, that was my preferred.
You know what you're doing. It's good. It's very, very good. So let's get into the slightly less important questions, but important questions nonetheless. So marketing is important, but very different in loads of different organizations. And so is the role of being a CMO. So what does marketing mean at Innocent? And following up from that, what does being CMO mean for you in terms of your day-to-day?
So at Innocent, marketing, just from a kind of purpose level, is about how we ultimately deliver growth for the organization. So it's very much at that kind of level. And underneath that, there's three key kind of areas that marketing covers within Innocent. One is strategy. Mm-hmm. And that hasn't always been the case. So that's probably more since I've come into this role as well. Mm-hmm. And I really see the value and importance of marketing really leading from a strategic point of view, particularly in a branded business. And Innocent is the name above the door, and it's the name on the product as well. So there's a real kind of specialness there that probably I haven't experienced in other companies. We have been a brand within a broader company. Secondly is around creation. And so the development, whether that be product innovation, whether that be communication. And then the third area is around execution. So they're the three areas that we cover off. So from kind of my team's remit point of view, just to give you a bit more context around that, we look after the brand and the portfolio. I also have a team that look after what we call Force for Good, but others might know that as ESG or sustainability, corporate comms, nutrition, etc. And that's so hardwired into the brand Innocent, much more than I've experienced in other businesses as well. We obviously look after kind of the insight side of stuff as well. We have our own internal creative team at Innocent, which again might be quite unique for some businesses. And they develop the big idea right through to execution in the creative team. And I think it's probably one of the reasons why we've had such a strong identity as a brand for so long and a real sense of tone of voice as well. And in the third area is product development. So in Fruit Towers, we have what we call our kitchen. So if I went downstairs just now, there's a whole load of people in the kitchen playing about with lots of different fruit and veg, creating the new kind of products for the future as well. So where does marketing sit in the importance of the business? Hugely, you know.
Yeah.
The brand is the business is the brand. So it plays a massive role. What's quite interesting as well, because the name above the door is the name on the bottle as well. The input from lots of people is quite extensive as well, because everybody really feels the ownership of that brand.
Nice.
So the responsibility that comes with the role is quite big. Yeah. The opportunity is also exciting at the other side as well.
That's mad. So, I mean, it really does seem huge. And even when you sort of say you've got an input on stuff like product, it feels like that's kind of like a bit of a dream for so many marketers, you know, because that's probably something that is often you're given a product and then you're saying, go market it, you know, but the fact that you're sort of having those opportunities to have an insight and sort of provide that seems unique.
Yeah. The team would start with the insight. The brand team, you know, the insight team would start with what the insight is. So what's the consumer insight? What's the opportunity? What's the proposition we want to develop? And then they'll work with the product development team in creating that proposition. I'm definitely in the place of, you know, let's make what we can sell rather than sell what we can make. Nice. And I think that's really important, because if you want to be a consumer-centric business, that's a really important distinction for me.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And I want to pick up on a couple more things there, because you used the word purpose there, and I want to pick that up, because that was literally one of the first words that came out of your mouth. So is that an important part of your role as well? I mean, you mentioned part of your team was focused specifically on that. So
yeah.
Like, do you own quote-unquote purpose, or is that something that also is sort of across the business? How does that work?
So we have a purpose that is across the business and across the brand, so we don't have two separate purposes. And I think, you know, versus other businesses we have come from, where we might have had a purpose for the business, and then each individual brand will have a purpose that sits underneath that.
Yeah.
There's a real power in having the same thing, because your brand lives across so many touch points. This is so embedded in the business, as well as what we sell to consumers as well. So I think it's such a powerful place to be, and brings different nuances and challenges versus the other model. And purpose is really, you know, we're actually just sharpening up our purpose just now. And that's something that I would be leading within the organization, because we see the importance that plays. But again, you know, it's in every office building. As soon as you walk in, our purpose sits above the door and therefore drives everything that we do as an organization.
That's wicked. It's really, 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 really cool. You know, like, I think the what you've described there with having it above the door, the connection between the two, you know, it's on the bottle, it's on the door, that's something special. It feels, do you get the impression that, like, you've used the words I think that were close to, you know, it's like a branded company, it's a branded product, you know, do you get the sense that marketing is therefore taken way more seriously innocent because of that connection, or is that an unfair thing to say?
I think the brand is seen as really important. I think there's still a little bit of this disconnect between the role that marketing plays with that, as there is with lots of businesses. So I don't think there's anything unique about the situation we're in. In some ways, there's some real positive. In other ways, it's definitely owned across the business, rather than it feeling like marketing really have a distinctive role and a point to play. And again, that brings advantages and disadvantages. You know, everybody really feels they owns it. The disadvantage of that, everybody has a say on it as well.
Yeah.
So it depends how you see that. Everybody's got a point of view. Everybody feels that they've got, you know, a position in what the advertising, the packaging should look like, you know, what our social media, everybody's got a point of view on it, which can be good research input. And it can be quite challenging for the team sometimes as well, to make sure you keep that single-mindedness, particularly as you get bigger and you have more people having more views and opinions and everything.
That's so interesting. I mean, you know, it's so interesting, because of course, so often, like, I think we, for folks who aren't in that position where people feel like, oh yeah, okay, marketing's in the corner over there or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
you know, they kind of want that position where everyone feels involved in marketing and
yeah.
So to hear that experience where it's like, okay, you know, here's the good bits, but also here's some bad bits, or not even bad bits, but you know, things that are observation.
Really
interesting.
And I think some of that comes from it being a founder developed business as well, which again, for anybody that's experienced that and not experienced, it is a different experience. You know, it's the first time I've truly worked in a founder based business, you know, where you had three guys that set the business up and had a very strong view of how they saw the business and how it should show up. Once you start to get a bigger size, and obviously the three founders have obviously moved on from the business as well, it's really hard to keep that single-minded direction because you've got 850, 900 people that different perspectives and viewpoints of how they want things, how they see things. And therefore, how you build your business and how you work with the teams has to evolve as well, because you've got more people to enroll and get behind things, and you've also got more people's views and perspectives and experiences to help you get to an even better place than you are.
That's really
so that transition is quite an interesting space as well.
Yeah, that's huge. That's really huge. And I know as a founder, then I just get in the way of things, generally speaking. But do you sort of try and reach back into the past? And sorry, Hannah in the chat here said, not you, Joe, surely. Yes, definitely me. Do you ever try and reach back into the past and sort of reach for that founder story? Or you sort of speak, or you mentioned evolving there. Like, is it far more about evolution now than it is sort of reaching back into the past? Or how do you think about that?
Yeah, it's interesting because we're right in the middle of kind of our next strategic cycle as a brand. So it's been a really interesting time over the last kind of 6 months. And as you look past in the history of Innocent, and I genuinely do believe, understand where you've come from to help you work out where you need to go. And I think one of the things that Innocent did when it first launched into the market, it had a really clear kind of point of view and enemy and distinctiveness. Yeah. It was quite single-minded about what it was about as well. And I think as we've grown over the years, we've added lots to that. So we've probably, the word I use is we've become a bit flabby. We've added lots of things and we can do this. So we're a very excitable business. We can do this and we can do that and we can do this. And I think one of the things as we start to look forward in a highly complex world where we have to have more of an edge and more of our point again, we need to get back to that original founder's thinking, which is about being single-minded and simple. Nice. But we've got to express it in a way that's relevant for tomorrow's consumer. And so that kind of thread feels like it's quite consistent. The bit that we need to remember is you need to evolve in the context that sits within. And sometimes we're good at that, and sometimes I think we probably stuck too much to how things have been rather than thinking about how we need to re-express things, particularly as the markets become more competitive, as the context changes, the external challenges change as well. It's just how we keep that relevant and express it in the right way.
Well, that in itself is fascinating because, you know, when Innocent first came on the block, and, you know, I'm old enough to remember, you know, well, 1999 that was founded, but it's 24 years old now as a company. And like, I remember when it came out, it felt new and different. Mm-hmm. And like you were, the packaging, even the micro copy on the packaging was like, oh, you know, this is cool and no one else is doing this sort of stuff. And when you sort of speak about evolving to the market and the conditions and so on and so forth, then there's a lot more people who are doing that kind of stuff now. So how do you think about that? Do you double down on like the sort of there's a correct term which escapes me now, but the sort of wacky, you know, sort of elements, and do you double down on that and say this is us, you know, because that is distinctly us, or do you seek like differentiation again and doing something different because that's no longer serving you in that way?
It's such a relevant conversation that we're currently having as well. As we start to think about where do we need to go next, because as you say, lots of brands have imitated us, and that's brilliant. And the reason why our tone of voice came about in the first place was, let's just talk as if we're talking one-to-one as a human, you know. And there's a bit of, you know, it's quite a natural, it's a very human tone of voice. And if you think of the brands at the time, they were very much talking down to you as a consumer as well. I think we need to continue to stay true to that. I think one of the things that we've probably done over the years is kind of lost a little bit of our seriousness of message, mm-hmm. and probably overplayed the slapstick and the humour. Right. And I think particularly now that we're that bit older and with the challenges that are in the external environment, I think we've got quite a strong story to tell, mm-hmm. but we need to do that in an engaging and warm way as well, if we really want to make the change that I think sits within us at Innocent about getting, you know, good products into people and hopefully doing good in the world, you know, particularly from a kind of environmental point of view as well. So I think staying true to what we're about rather than completely changing, because that would feel like it would kind of go against the authenticness of, that we have. It's suddenly like you talking to me in a very different way. It would just be, where's Joe gone? What's he doing? But I think our message, I think we have the opportunity to be a bit more pointy about some of the messages that we want to say as well.
Okay. That's amazing as an insight. I mean, it seems big though, like as a challenge, that seems big.
Yeah, it really is. But the word I use to my team is we don't want to become a caricature of ourselves.
Yeah.
And I think that's why it's really important to be a little bit restless and not to be complacent as a brand. I mean, I think that's a big job with us as marketeers, is not to be complacent. We should be able to start seeing things and predicting them before they happen, mm-hmm. and adapting and evolving. But that can be sharpening up. It doesn't necessarily mean to be repositioning, you know, and that's the danger, particularly when you come into, you get new people in the roles. There's this danger that you've got to keep doing, you've got to change things, you know, and actually sometimes it's not about changing. It's about how we're executing, or it might be just about sharpening up what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And I think having that kind of, you know, relentlessness and, you know, slight nervousness that, you know, you don't become complacent.
Mm-hmm. I adore that. I think it's so, so important. Amy in the chat has put evolution, not revolution. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I thank you for that point, because I think so often the temptation is to reach for a rebrand or whatever it may be. And it's my observation as I was listening to you speak there is, you know, Ritson is someone I spend an awful time listening to, and he sort of says you have your distinctive brand assets and sometimes it can take 30 years. And like you're right on the cusp of that, you know, sort of being that that's your thing and so on and so forth. So it feels like a really interesting point to hear that sort of expressed in practice, where you're saying, yeah, you know, we're not actually looking to throw the baby out with the bathwater. We want to just sort of become a bit more pointy. That feels like a really interesting and well verbalized point. So I just want to say thank you for that, because that's really useful.
I mean, in the 3-4 years, we've probably got one brand distinctive asset, which is what we call our dude. and the other one is Big Knit, actually.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's over those years, but you know, that's about consistency, and it's putting meaning behind them, and but the value that's in that is massive.
And so that's really interesting. I mean, so I know I've tried to do my research for today, but like the Big Knit is something that I'm fascinated with and equally know reasonably little about, but it feels like it's important to you. So would you be able to sort of like express why it's important to Innocent? You know, it feels like a good project and something that is useful, but how does it sit in the business as like a priority or however it sits? Yeah.
Do you know, it's one of these ones, when I came into the business, you kind of sit down with the strategy and you say, we're about helping people on the planet live well. And you go, right, let's look at the Big Knit. Let's understand how that fits. You think that doesn't fit at all, but it's really successful. And it's one of those things. It's just, there's a quirk in it. If I was being very logical, I could easily go, I'm not sure how that fits with what we're trying to do strategically, but the illogic in it makes it work perfectly. And I think there's some magic in there that is innocent magic as well. So for those that don't know, Big Knit is every year, people knit little hats to put on our smoothie bottles. And in the office that I'm in today, we have a massive big container that's just full of packages of people sending in little knitted hats. And a percentage of that goes to heavily aged. So it's about helping old people. And we do it in most of our markets across Europe now as well. And when you go into the shops, we have little knitted hats on top of bottles. And it's just one of these things that's captured people's imagination. I mean, the amount of people that sit knitting, coming up with different styles, bags of knitted hats, etc. And it's just like that little hat that warms, you know, old people down up, you know, in moments when it's cold and they need support, etc. And there's some logic to it, but it's a bit illogical as well. And I just think it's got some humour, it's got some charm around it. People can get involved in it and feel they can make a difference. And it's for, you know, part of the population that I can't but like, you know, who can not like old people? So it's got that slightly illogical. And if I think about it too much, I could easily find a way not to do it and invest my money somewhere else. But I think we'd miss what makes innocent innocent, which is just some of that kind of, it's one of those illogical human things that's really successful and does a great job for us and captures people's imagination.
I'd love that so much. And Emily's put in the chat here just one word, which is community, you know, and mm-hmm. it's like you're investing yeah. in the community,
yeah.
Which feels special, you know, and how, so, okay, let's loop together those two conversations, because we were speaking about strategy and then we were speaking about something which feels quite illogical.
Yeah.
How do you begin to think about those sort of things when you're going through your strategic process? Do you leave room for the illogical and the magical and the quote unquote innocent stuff? Or do you just go, yeah, okay, we need to go with logic because this is where we are. And then we're going to sort of expand out from there over the next few years.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things that innocence really grown up through and has a real strength is around, if I think about strategy creation and execution, I think the creative bit we've always been great at. Yeah. I think we're a great creative, innovative, ideas-y type business. As we start to get bigger as an organisation and think about how we grow, and you know, it, in the early days of your business, it's hard, but it's easier to grow, isn't it? Because the business is there to be had. You start to get to a stage where it's like, we need to think more consciously about how we're actually going to grow our brand, where we're actually going to grow it. Mm-hmm. So I think having that strategic framework is really important. And that's something that I really... I'm passionate about for the marketing team at Innocent, because it allows us to make choices. It makes us clear about where we want to play and how we're going to win. Mm-hmm. But I think when it comes to the execution of that, that's where I think go off and play and have some fun and bring that, you know, what the innocentness into that. And I think getting the balance between having that framework and having the freedom within that to come up with some great creative ideas to address those consumer issues or opportunities, that's where I think you start to really hit the sweet spot.
That's so lovely. That's a really useful way to think about it. So thank you very much. I appreciate that. We've got exactly to the point of your comments there. We've got Amanda who says, I love the cheekiness of their social media, which presumably sits in the execution sort of element yeah. of things. We've got Leonie sort of saying, innocent, a greater community, even things like tweeting during the Great British Bake Off, part of the gang, and it's not about the smoothies. Like, that's yeah. that's so cool. I mean, like, so I was speaking to my wife about this before, actually, like, and I said, well, what would you ask the CMO of Innocent? Yeah. And she said, you know, how do you walk the line on that execution thing? So how do you go out to the team and sort of say, you know, here you go execute, you know, this is what we want to achieve. Because, like, sometimes being reactive is also walking close to the line and, yep. and all that sort of stuff. I mean, like, everyone in the comments has been very, very complimentary. But, I mean, presumably there's moments where you go, ooh, we didn't quite get that right, or whatever it may be.
There has. And you know, as you become a bigger business, the kind of pressure, for want of a better word, to make sure that we are a responsible business, mm-hmm. because it's just more visible, you know, and there is more structure that needs to go around that. So, you know, we're really clear about the positioning of our brand. We've actually got some guardrails around where we'd go and what we would say, and also how we would say it, particularly from a social point of view as well. And then the team need to be empowered to go off and do that, because exactly as you say, you know, a lot of it's in the moment reacting. You know, we have conversations with our consumers online, so we're reacting to what people say, but there's quite a clear playbook that the team work towards. Mm-hmm. And we have certain topics that may have higher risk, and therefore they know when to engage other people within the business or the team, where topics start to become more sensitive or slightly more challenging as well. Because uh-huh. We're very conscious about, and the team, which we call our people champions team, that answer and post most of the social stuff, are highly skilled. They're very emotionally sensitive as well. They really have a feel for the tone of voice of the brand and how we would respond to things. And, you know, on certain topics, we do use our external affinity groups, for example, to bounce some stuff off, get their sense, get different perspectives on how different groups of people may respond to different subject matters as well. So that is something that we really do value. And I think we try to listen as a, but we never try to say we're right. We're always keen to learn. You know, and we never say we're perfect as well. And I think they're quite good traits to have as we start to kind of, particularly when we're you know, connecting and communicating and engaging with our community and broader audience.
It speaks to humility, I think, as much as anything. That's a word that comes to mind, and sort of having your ears open to
And sometimes we do get it wrong, and sometimes we're like, oh my god.
So like without
but I think you have to give that freedom, you have to go, and as long as we, you know, we always learn from all these situations.
Well, that, I mean, and that's really powerful, you know, that last sentence, we always learn from these situations. I guess, you know, I can't help but put myself in your shoes here, and like, you used the word risk earlier when you were describing, as you get bigger, there's more risk that comes from speaking to more people and so on and so forth. How do you not just let fear paralyze you from saying anything? Because presumably there's a risk of offending people, but there's a risk on the other side of not saying anything at all. Is that just not in your makeup as a team or as an individual? Or is that, you know, a conscious choice to say, okay, we're not going to be fearful because we stand for this, this, and this, and we know that's good?
I mean, I was having this conversation with someone on my team the other day. If I use a specific topic, so around sustainability, and I'm probably quite a lot of people on this call, you know, as an agenda item, how businesses are responding to consumers and, you know, legal pressure, all for the right reasons for us to be more responsible about how we, you know, produce, market, sell our products, and that is really important to Innocent. It's always been at the heart of it. We know the legislation around that space is rapidly changing, the science around that space is as well, so kind of knowing what's the right thing and wrong thing to do. We're in quite an interesting time just now because it's changing quite a lot. And my biggest fear because of that is that we end up saying nothing because we're so fearful of saying anything. And I think that although I believe we need to have proper regulation to ensure that that brands are and companies are doing the right thing, we need to do that in a way that still enables brands and companies to talk about it, because I think we have a massive responsibility to change behavior, consumer behavior in this space. And marketing have a huge opportunity to step in that into that. So I am really I have a real strong point of view that we need to be able to talk about these things in the right way, because if we don't, then I think we'll never change behavior, we'll never have better understanding of different groups of people, different viewpoints, etc. So I think it is really important we do that, but we do it in a way that we're willing to listen. We also back up our words with action as well, and I think that's really important. From an innocent point, particularly from an innocent point of view, it's we need to have action behind that.
100%. Well, people are watching, I guess, one way or another, you know. And
and it's easy to say stuff. You have to then back that up with the actions you're taking yourself as well.
Absolutely. Bang on. So I love that.
I think as soon as we stifle, as soon as we bring fear into the situation, I think you stifle creativity. And I think that's a dangerous place to get ourselves into.
Weirdly, as you said that, I just felt so uplifted. You know, it's like, you know, avoiding fear because it will stifle your creativity. I think that's so powerful. Folks, I can see in the chat that there's been some great questions that have come in, and I don't want to miss them. I feel like, you know, I could monopolize this, and I don't want to. So a big favor to ask, if you head into the Q&A feature right now, there's a bunch of open questions. What I would ask is you give a thumbs up to the ones that you really, really want ask, asking?
Should have glasses on.
Don't worry, I'll ask them for you. So your reading is not part of the brief today. But also, folks, if you could go to the bottom of the questions and start working from there as well, because I think sometimes there's great questions that come up as the conversation goes on, and we don't want to miss those questions either. So if you start from the bottom, give them a thumbs up, then we'll make sure that we ask the most popular questions. Is this a charging cable coming in right
yes,
now?
Yes, it is my charging cable coming in. Sorry, I'm not that well planned. You can tell this is actually live, can't you? And I'm having
That's perfect. Well,
that would have been good if I disappeared.
Yeah. So let's take the first question from Jennifer. And we've got Simon saying, so human. So there you go, humility. So we've got a question from Jennifer, which is, how does your team come up with your content ideas? So I think this sits closer to the execution sort of bit, but I know
really utilize
what you do. So
it's a very good answer, Jennifer. How do they come up with these great ideas? So again, it's going back to what I said earlier. It starts with getting a really clear strategy, which starts with what's our insight, what's our strategy, what's our objective, what are we trying to do the from and to. So I'm on a bit of a campaign, and I have been for the last couple of years, around getting to really clear briefs. I think it's such an underrated thing. And spending the proper time really stress testing and challenging those. Because I think it's once we're really clear and tight on that brief, we've got an internal creative team at Innocent, which makes it fantastic. And that brief gets handed over to the creative team. And that's their job off the back of that brief to create the content. Working with the social team as well. So the creative team working with the social team together will work through what that content is. But for me, that really starts with having a really tight brief.
And I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't ask you, you know, the components of that brief or something you think is particularly interesting about how you brief internally at Innocent to get to where you need to be. I mean, what does that look like, or is there any observations that you have about creating a really tight brief?
First of all, getting your context really tight. So get people in the framework about what's the problem you're trying to get in the context really tight. And I think the danger is we like to put everything in its mother in. So getting really tight on what that context is, and getting really clear on what's the from and to, what's the insight bridge, what's the thing that we're trying to get consumers, what they think, feeling, doing now, and where do we want to get them to think, feel, do, I think is really important. And what is that insight? Yep. That's going to make that bridge. I think getting really tight on that, and it's not easy writing briefs. You know, I think if you think you can sit down and do that, pop that out in an hour, I don't think your briefs are going to be good enough. And sharing that with other people just to do the what I'd call the sniff test, yep. Not being close to this, do you really understand it? Does it make sense, or is it just a lot of marketing?
Yeah. Rubbish. Yeah.
Yes, that's the word I was looking for.
Don't worry. The audience.
I think sometimes we over intellectualize it, and I think you just need to step back and go, actually, if I really strip this back, is this really clear? Does it make sense? Yeah. And can I see what that could lead to?
Mm-hmm. That's perfect. Amy says in the chat, Amy always brings really, really good chat comments, but here she says, this is huge, simplicity. So many people want to put every single message into every piece of comms, but I think
what's interesting for me, having the internal creative team versus when I've always worked with external agencies, you really get the honest view. So my creative team will wander up to the straight away and just go off on one about what pile of shite the brief is. They don't understand any of it. What's this meant to be? So you really get, which the agencies tend to protect you from a little bit and do that. That's really interesting. Are you really clear about this? They're just quite forthright around, you know, what they think of it.
I love that. I wonder whether there's something that you could do with your agency partners, whether or not they do it, I don't know, but you know, tell us the top five things that are wrong with this brief or something like that.
Yeah, before you even... Not just tell us how great it is, because there will be a tendency to kind of, you know, they're managing you as a client, but
yeah. That's cool. Honesty within the team is good. I like that a lot. Let's go to the next one with Leonie. Again, a more execution focused question, but I think it probably also plays into your strategy and stuff you've already spoken about a little bit as well, which is often innocent social, Twitter in particular, feels very off the cuff and reactionary. How engineered is that? And slash all, how much freedom do the team have? Is it one exceptionally funny person in control of the platform, or do you have multiple people on the accounts? And if so, how do they keep that tone of voice so consistent?
Well, as I said earlier on, we have what we call our people champions. So they are in the UK, there's five of those, what we call people champions. So they'll be responding a lot more to the kind of topical stuff and having conversations with people as well, so responding to the conversation. And we do have quite a tight playbook on that, and they're just highly attuned to the tone of voice and how they respond to stuff. So anybody going into that role has to go through quite a bit of training before they move into that role. We have an overall kind of calendar for the year, so key things that we know will happen within the year, and then they've pretty much got a lot of space to within that to kind of respond and be more kind of topical in their, depending on what is happening in the day and within the week as well. So they do have quite a bit of freedom, but within a degree of framework, and we do have control mechanisms. If conversations start to go off in a direction we don't want them to go off on, or topics that might have some more sensitivity, there is a escalation. And we've had to do that, you know, particularly more over the last kind of couple of years, where some topics, you know, either through our lack of knowledge or understanding, or they have more sensitivity, we do need to do that in a way to make sure that we are managing our own reputation, but also managing our community in the right way and in a positive way as well.
Yeah, it's a tricky thing when you've got so many people interacting one way or another. You know, it feels like a really, really big task. I'm definitely not envious of you in that way.
Yeah, I mean, with and with lots of stuff around, obviously, hashtag Me Too, Black Lives Matter, gender, sexuality, all these things. There's such complex conversations as well, and how we navigate through those. You know, we need to be a lot more conscious of that.
Absolutely. It's conversations absolutely that are so important to have. But as you say, with you know, one of the themes that came through with your earlier answers was about having your ears open to finding out about how to have those conversations. So I really appreciate that. One of the questions that came through that links in with something you mentioned earlier. So you use the word empowered to describe your team, and the chat sort of lit up for a few moments there where folks were sort of speaking about empowered is the way to go. And the question comes from Sophie, and Sophie asks, how do you keep your team creative? The question is, how do you keep your team creative? But I'd love to know about how you sort of, as a manager and a leader, also think about keeping your team empowered, because that feels important, and you're a leadership role as much as you're a marketing role. So do you have any management philosophies that you could share with us?
Oh, God, that sounds very grand. Just to say that. So from a creativity point of view, I'm a massive believer in getting the outside in. So how do you bring different stimulus into the team? Because I think that's the thing that helps with creativity, making those connections and building, taking stimulus from there and connecting with something else and applying it to the problem or opportunity you've got as well. So we spend a lot of time at Innocent really trying to get the outside in, whether that's speakers from different industries, people with different experiences. I mean, last week we had somebody in that came to talk to the team about cycling around the world. Yeah. And the experiences he's had and the impact he has and what that meant for him as well. And honestly, just at the end of the session, energy in the room, the kind of connectivity between everybody, because they were discussing it and talking about it. And I know I might not get something out of that today, but I know that I'll be storing up to bring some creativity to a problem or opportunity. So that's a big area that we really focus on from a creative point of view. The second question you asked was about empowerment. Yeah. And it's one of those lovely things to say. And it's a lovely thing you always want to have as well, which is, my boss doesn't really empower me to do that. And for me, empowerment really comes with, you know, from my position, being really clear about what's the vision, what's my ambition, what am I trying to achieve, and then how do I empower the team to develop the plan and deliver against that. That's not my job to do that. My job is to set the vision and create the context for the team. But with empowerment comes a huge amount of responsibility and accountability. And both come together in my book. So I can't just say I want empowerment without understanding the responsibility and accountability that comes with that empowerment. And I think if you've got a good understanding of both of those and a good appreciation of both of those, then it, I think that helps the environment to enable that to happen.
Nice. I love that. And without meaning to put you on the spot, because like whenever I ask for examples, then people go, oh dear, you know, like and try and reach into their brain. But like, do you have any favorite examples of where you've kind of empowered someone to go off and do something, and like you've come back and you've gone, ah, you know what, they've just absolutely nailed that. Like this is it in action. And I guess the reason why I'm asking that question is like, what did the empowerment phase look like and what you got back, and sort of bridging those two experiences together?
If I take an innocent example, last year, we made an announcement that we were going to go carbon neutral as a business by 2025. So bringing quite a lot of our commitments forward. And a big enabler for that was the fact that we've just built our own factory. It's one of the greenest factories on the globe. It's really kind of futuristic in its approach to how to produce. And we wanted to use that in a way to inspire our consumers and others to make a difference. And that was kind of the brief. That was it. and I wanted an idea that could work across all markets. So it was an idea that could work across Europe. Okay. And Innocent traditionally has grown up by having individual executions in each market rather than looking at big ideas, apart from Big Knit more recently. But and that was the brief. Mm-hmm. And between my sustainability team, the brand team, the insight team, and the creative team, working with the market teams as well, with lots of discussion, lots of fallouts, lots of makeups, they came up with the idea, which was the Big Rewild, which we launched last year. Mm-hmm. And that was really about giving land back to nature. And we work with individual charities across the different markets as well. But over the next 3 years, we want to give the equivalent space of Wales back to nature. Mm-hmm. And it was called the Big Rewild, and we had a big launch last year as well. So massive PR off the back of that. Huge credit from a kind of investing in and walking the talk as well. And also did a job because we tied it back to our orange juice. So the greenest, the freshest way to start the day. And that was a small but quite big example of just setting, this is the task or the opportunity, and then empowering the team. Yeah. And they've had to navigate through lots of kind of sustainability claims and changes in that over that period of time, and the whole greenwashing piece as well. And there's some stuff they didn't always get 100% right. And that was okay because they learned, but it was better that they had the ownership and belief in it, because they then drove that rather than feeling like it was, this is what you need to do. Yeah. And I think sometimes you need to weigh off something being 100%. And people not feeling like they own it versus something being 80% and people really having the belief and passion behind it.
I love that. I feel proud for them. You know, it must be just so nice to see the team in action sort of delivering something like that. It's really, really cool. Yeah. Amanda in the chat saying, wow, I didn't really realize the rewild area was that big. So that's really, really cool. We've also got a couple of people asking if the playbook is available to read everywhere. I'm assuming it isn't, but it's worth asking the question. I'm taking that shake of the head.
And it's, do you know what? Hindsight's a wonderful thing. And there's so many brands that I've worked on when it's easy to look back and then you can write the playbook. Yeah. So I'll, you know, sometimes you stumble on it. And I love, we can all have the best intent and we can write the best strategies and all that. But sometimes I do believe in a bit of luck and a little bit of magic as well. And obviously a business can't live on just magic alone. But I think sometimes just having that, and that's a combination of the right people, the right context, the right moment. Mm-hmm. And you can then look back and you can write what led to success, but sometimes it's quite hard to do that in the moment.
Yeah, a theme of your answer so far has often been about sort of like listening and being open to those moments, you know, and I love that. So I think that's also an important point, that writing your own playbook is important, you know, which is yeah, really, really great. Let's take the next question, because I'm conscious I've asked three and there's 46 open. I know.
Well, this is going to be a long session.
So the next question comes from Anonymous, and there's a couple of comments in the chat about Coca-Cola and plastic. So I want to come back to that.
Just
so it's there. But with Anonymous asks, do you ever feel resistance from operations or other team members when trying to keep a strong, such a strong brand voice? Have you had to combat this? So your earlier answers were often about like the whole company having a perspective on marketing. So have you actually got the opposite problem sometimes as well, I guess?
Not innocent, no. I think the challenge we have just now is because we're the way we I would describe it is we're moving from being a big small business to a small big business. So structurally, culturally, operationally, that shift, and that is sucking quite a lot of energy, more so in the operational side of the business. So it's, as we are making that transition, how do we make sure that the brand voice and the brand is still key in that? In addition, like probably quite a lot of businesses that people are working in just now, the external pressure is pretty intense. So we're not exempt from all the inflationary challenges, and being a fruit and veg business, some of those are quite tough, compounded by a lot of the, you know, climate challenges that are impacting crops, all that kind of stuff as well, you know, and therefore that puts pressure on the investment we can put behind marketing. So how we get to growth strategies, the role that we have to play to really demonstrate how we can get to growth, how we can be smarter about how we use our investment, are all things that are becoming more important for the marketing team. Because although we're very strong and we're a branded, you know, the company and the brand are the same thing, we still have to make money, you know, we still have to pay wages. So managing that over the last kind of couple of years is challenging.
Absolutely. It's an undeniably tough environment to operate in right now, you know, and you look at Silicon Valley Bank over the weekend and the fear that's
been,
you know, and but you can point to any number of things and it's undeniably tough. So, you know, a very biased perspective on all this is why community is important, for people to be able to come together and have these conversations about stuff like how to approach budgeting in a tough environment and so on.
Because it's all new, and a lot of this, for all the fact that I've been in marketing for more years than I'm going to announce today, you know, it's a different context and experience than I've had as well. So, you know, I don't have all the answers by any stretch, and I think don't ever feel you have to have all the answers. I think, as you say, that's why it's important you have that network and those connections, because it's just even reassuring to know that others have the same problems.
Absolutely. 100%. Like, I was giving a talk yesterday at the University of Essex, and it was amazing, the power of sort of saying you are seen, and you are, you know, you are not alone. You know, those two statements alone are so. Let's pick up the Coca-Cola chat, because that was in the chat, and I promised to sort of speak about that. So we were speaking about sustainability, and the comment from Rory in the chat, and I don't know the fact check on here, but is that Coca-Cola have a reputation for plastic pollution. That is up against the innocent sort of branding, which is very eco-friendly, sustainable, et cetera, et cetera. So how do you even approach conversations like that? Because that's quite tricky, right? You know, there's a lot there.
So if I start just to, so that people understand what the relationship with Coke is as well. So 9-10 years ago, the original three founders sold the business in stages to Coke, and Coke is now our shareholder as such. So they have the business. Our three founders, just so that everybody knows, we have a foundation, so that's a charitable wing to our business, and the three founders are still part of that. And occasionally they'll come into the office, or we might use them as, you know, either to kind of get some context around how the business used to be. And they're obviously still emotionally invested and keen to understand how the business goes and how it's supported. But in the day-to-day operations, they're not involved. The model that we have with Coke is called connected, not integrated. Mm-hmm. So that means we have our own culture, we have our own offices, we have our own teams. So in, you know, I think particularly for the first year and a half I started Innocent, I think I maybe had one conversation with somebody at Coke. Mm-hmm. So it's quite in that. But what we can do is leverage some of the scale efficiencies, and also, you know, not to be naive, Coke invest behind our brand, you know, and our business as well. They enable us to do the stuff that we need to do. Obviously they want us to be profitable as well, but they do enable that, and that's a great position for us to be in, because before that, from a profitability point of view, Innocent probably had some challenges. It was doing some great stuff, but wasn't necessarily standing in its own 2 feet as well as it could do. When it comes to things like sustainability, someone's already said, you know, that's very much at the heart of what our business is about, and we have some very clear targets that we obviously communicate externally as well. Innocent was probably ahead of its time in this space. Mm-hmm. Through all the right reasons, most businesses have now really started to cotton on to the fact that they need to take a stronger stance in that. And I think what Innocent has managed to do is start to influence Coke. So I think Coke see us as a bit of a flagship that they can kind of then learn from. Mm-hmm. It is challenging sometimes, because we will get you're part of Coke, but I think we've all got to believe. Yeah. And, you know, Coke have also set out some really clear objectives that they want to achieve as well. And are definitely on that track to do that. And I genuinely believe we've got to support businesses by moving forward rather than criticizing where they are. And I think that's the most important thing that we need to do. We still need to do more in that space. We are not perfect by any stretch. We know there's challenges around plastic, and we believe in the circular economy, and we also believe in the fact that our products need to be delivered in a way that's health and safety to in a way that's, you know, safe for our consumers as well. But we've got more to do. You know, we're actively investing along with Coke and looking at ways that we can get our product out to consumers in either returnable or refillable packaging as well. And you know, rPET plays a massive role, but there's some challenges around that because there isn't enough quantity globally to go after that. We're investing in plant-based plastic as well, so a more recyclable product. So there is some challenges. I think we're definitely all on the right track. I think we need to use our energy and time to focus on encouraging consumers, businesses to do more rather than criticize where they are. And we've all got more to do on that front. None of us are perfect yet, you know, but we're going to have to invest in technology. We need to find solutions to get to a better place, and we don't have some of those just now.
That's perfect. You know, thank you for addressing it. You know, I think it would have been easily, you know, so to give a bit of insight then before the conversation today, then I emailed Kirsty and sort of said, you know, like, is anything off the table? And you said no, you know, and then before the chat I just confirmed the same, and you said no, you know, it's okay to address these conversations head on. So like, I think what your answer displays is like a willingness to do more, a self-awareness of where we are, but then it also combined with like we recently had a conversation with the then head of sustainability at Brompton Cycles, and Louisa described sustainability as not a thing you achieve, it is a journey that you go on. And
I believe in that, yeah,
100%. And combine that with, you know, your insight on sort of where you are and where you're going to, I think that's a really useful answer, so thank you. And just your point on sort of building people up, I think that's also really important, because that's where we need to be. So we've got Kestra who says, love the transparency. So I appreciate it. We've got a couple of questions left, and I'm going to take them being inspired by one of the podcasts that we released yesterday, which was with a chap called John Evans, who was the also known as the Uncensored CMO. And John recorded an episode for the Marketing Meetup podcast, where he reflected on the beginning of his career. So he was age 25 when he did that, and his big reflections on what he wished he knew when he was 25 at the beginning of his career. And so I kind of wanted to ask that to you. You know, it's a big, big question. I'm going to leave it broad, you know, sort of personal or marketing based, but if you could have your time again or start your career again, what would you have wanted to know that you know now?
Oh God. Everything's going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
So not to worry or preempt or, you know, have too fixed a view, actually, because life takes, opportunities come that you don't expect them to come, that you haven't predicted to come as well. And sometimes, you know, taking that path that you never thought leads you to quite a different place and an even better place sometimes, and that's okay. So I think not overly planning, you know. I remember when I was younger, it was like, what are you going to do in the next 5 years? Where do you want to be in the next 10 years? That's a conversation I don't really have with my team anymore at all, but that was always the kind of, you went into development plans and it was quite structured and organized, and this is where you were going to go, very linear as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and it's okay not for it not to turn out like that. I think I'd love to think back then, for a female in marketing, it's quite a different place, even, and I'm only talking 20 years ago, than it is today in the world as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd love to know that that was going to be the case when I was younger, because it was very different, you know. I never had a female boss. I didn't have female people that I worked around. I never knew a CEO, female CEO, female CMO. Just didn't exist, and it still doesn't exist as much as it should, but it didn't then, so that was quite a different context as well. And just listen and observe and learn, and you know, and make sure you get the right balance. This is going to sound really corny, but you've only got one life to lead. And I always used to say to my team, forget to tell my team sometimes, when you die and they put on your gravestone, Kirsty Hunter, she stayed an extra 3 hours at work last night to get that strategy finished. Is that really what I want to be known for in life?
Mm-hmm.
And just remember that balance, because honestly, my career has been a heartbeat. It's been so quick.
Mm-hmm.
And so kind of getting really clear on what my priorities are.
Mm-hmm.
And enjoying it, having fun. Right? If you can't enjoy work and you can't have fun in it, then kind of don't see the point.
Bang on. What?
I don't like being put on the spot. I'm a reflective thinker, Joe. So that I might look at myself and think, really? Is that what I said?
Well,
that's off the top of my head.
For what it's worth, then I think out of all the answers you've given today, and you've given some very, very interesting answers, that is the one that has that has given the chat feature. We've got Chantel saying, I've got the shivers. Thank you, Kirsty. We've got Amy saying, we've got Elizabeth saying, love this answer. And Amy saying, me too. We've got Sophie saying, can I come and work for you? Elizabeth saying, that was so powerful. And Lucy saying, that was awesome. So thank you for opening up in that way. Because
I'd speak to my team before you want to work for me. They might be very
different. they all seem very lovely from everyone I've spoken to. So and seem to be fans of you too. So I'm conscious we've gone over time, and I appreciate that you're also an extremely busy human. So I want to say just thank you so much for taking the hour with us today. You're more appreciated than you know, and you've got an abundance of praise coming through in the chat feature of people who are wishing nothing but the best for you. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Joe.
Not at all. And thank you to everyone for making this such a brilliant session, both in the chat and with your questions. If I could ask one favor, or in fact two, the first is if you share your biggest takeaway on social media afterwards, it helps us grow, meet new people. I would love that. And then the second is, if you wouldn't mind also sharing a word of thanks with our sponsor, our featured sponsors, that makes the world of difference as well. You'll get them in the follow-up email very, very shortly. With all that said, I can release you to do your job, Kirsty. So thank you so much, and thank you everyone for taking
Thank you. Enjoy your smoothies.
What a note to end on. Really appreciate it. And
all right. Thanks, everybody.
Cheers.
Enjoy.
Bye-bye. Bye.